because I'm worried about you. No, I want you here because I like the idea of you in my bed.
That works out well then, because I like being in your bed too. Mostly though, I like being in your arms.
Chapter 20. By mid-afternoon on Friday, I'm craving traffic jams and smog. I want to go out in the world, and damn the reporters and paparazzi and plain old gawkers. At the same time, I'm enjoying this bubble of domesticity I'm sharing with Damien. He's kicked back on the sofa, his bare feet on the coffee table, his iPad in one hand, and a sparkling water near the other. He's wearing a Bluetooth headphone in his far ear, so from my perspective, it looks as if he's mumbling to himself. I've long ago tuned him out. As fascinated as I am by Damien in general, I do not need to know the ins and outs of the labor problems that one of his subsidiaries is having in Taiwan. As for me, I've just finished reading a downloaded copy of The Martian Chronicles, and though I'd started the story with a picture of a young Damien in my mind, by the end, I'd been sucked in by the plot and the characters. Now, though, I'm feeling at loose ends. I don't have my laptop, so there's not much actual work I can do. I'm not in the mood to start another book, and the television doesn't interest me in the slightest. I consider putting on a fashion show for Damien, featuring the clothes he's stocked in the closet, but I can't quite bring myself to do it. I've been dominating his time lately, albeit unintentionally, and though he makes light of his need to oversee his empire, I know that the world of Damien Stark will unravel if he is not actively at the helm. I go to the kitchen to brew a cup of green tea, since it's supposed to be calming, and I feel so antsy. I'm actually not freaking out about the press, but I can't decide if that's because I'm dealing so well with this new crisis in my life, or if it's simply because Damien and I are locked up here in his castle in the sky, and the problems of mere mortals are really not our concern. I have a sneaking suspicion that it's the latter, and that when I go out into the world or log on to the internet, this smug sense of control is going to blow away like so much dandelion fluff. As evidence of my theory, I have only to look at my phone. My mother has called twice, and each time I've let it go to voicemail. I have not listened to the messages. I have not called her back. Honestly, I'm not sure I ever will. My mother has the ability to push me over the edge where even a Hummer full of paparazzi could not. Despite a world filled with paparazzi and Elizabeth Fairchilds and other unpleasant beings, I am so antsy that I consider testing the waters of the outside world by taking a walk down to the Museum of Contemporary Art. It's only a few blocks away, and I doubt that there are reporters waiting to ambush me there. It's also close enough that Damien won't worry. Or he won't worry as much, because if I start to freak, he is less than 5 minutes away by foot. Besides, I really want some fresh air. I take my tea and a fresh water for Damien and head back into the living room, arriving at the same time as Sylvia, who is coming in from the back entrance that connects to the office of Stark International.
"Miss Fairchild," she says, "how are you?"
"Good," I say. "How's life on the outside?" Damien grins at me.
"Going a little stir-crazy?"
Not that I don't love this fairy palace, but... He makes a non-committal noise, then turns to Sylvia, who appears to be hiding a smile.
"What have you got for me?"
"Just a few signatures," she says, handing him a clipboard and several documents. She glances at me. "And this came for you," she adds, then holds out a plain white envelope. It's addressed to me, care of Stark International. There's no return address, but the postmark is from Los Angeles. "That's weird," I say, as Damien tosses the clipboard onto a cushion and comes to my side.
"Open it," he says.
I do. There's a folded piece of paper inside.
I pull it out, unfold it, and immediately feel sick. Bitch. Slut. Whore. Motherfucker. Damien breathes, plucking the letter and the envelope from my hand. He takes a magazine from the coffee table and puts them both between the pages, then hands the magazine to Sylvia.
Get this to Charles. Don't get fingerprints on it.
Of course, Mr. Stark. Ms. Fairchild, I'm so sorry. I didn't know.
No, of course you didn't, I say.
It's okay, Sylvia.
Damien's words are a dismissal. She nods.
I'll just come back for those documents later.
She starts to leave, then pauses and turns back to me.
I apologize if this is out of line, Ms. Fairchild.
But I just wanted to say that I saw the painting when I was at the Malibu house, coordinating with the decorator before the party. I've been staring blankly at the magazine in which the vile note is hidden, but now I look up at her face with interest.
It's a beautiful portrait, she says. Stunning and engaging. Frankly, I think Mr. Stark got a bargain. As far as I'm concerned, it's worth at least $2 million.
I've been blinking back tears as she speaks, and now I burst out with a laugh that is choked with tears. Thank you, I say, then sniff. I shoot a wry grin toward Damien. I like her.
Yes, he says dryly. She's very capable.
His mouth is thin, but I can see the hint of amusement, not to mention the silent nod of thanks when he tells Sylvia,
that will be all.
She nods, then slips out of the apartment.
There are a lot of fucked up people in the world,
Damien says to me.
Don't let them get to you.
You're never going to be able to track who sent that letter.
Maybe not, but I'm going to try. By the way, I figured out which reporter originated the story.
Did Charles go see him?
He refused to reveal his source. I may pay him a visit myself, but I thought I'd go the more civilized route first. I've hired a private investigator. I'm guessing he met in person with the source. With any luck, my guy will learn something.
I nod, but I don't expect much. Honestly, I'm not sure I care. I'm certain it wasn't Jamie or Ollie, and they are the only two who could truly injure me by being duplicitous. Other than that, it's the information alone that hurts. And no matter who revealed it, there's no putting that genie back in the bottle. Not now, not ever. I want to go out, I say to Damien, who stares at me for a second, obviously trying to digest my sudden change in topic.
Any place in particular?
I was thinking about the Mocha, I say. I figure there aren't many reporters lying in wait there.
All right, he says. Let's go.
But then I changed my mind, I continue. I want to go shopping. Let's go look for things for the house. There are all sorts of cute stores on Melrose, or anywhere in West Hollywood. Doesn't that sound like fun?
I always have fun when I'm with you, he says. But that area is crowded, and it only takes one person who gets off on tabloid news calling TMZ or some other rag before we'll be surrounded by the vultures.
I know, I say. But I don't care. I want back in the world. It's not like they can't get me in here, too. Didn't one of them just send me a letter? He winces, but nods.
All right, then, he says. I guess we have a date.
We're not looking for anything in particular, other than each other's company, and that makes wandering the store as pleasant, especially since no one seems to be paying any attention to us. A new store has opened on Fairfax, selling high-end antiques, and a massive bed with a head and footboard that is intricately carved from oak immediately catches my eye.
A bed, Ms. Fairchild?
Damien asks. I don't know, I say. It's worth considering.
After all, the house is currently without a bed. I lie down on it, then roll onto my side and pat the mattress, making a point to smile suggestively. Shall we test it out? His lips twitch.
Careful. You're subject to my rules, remember? Who knows what I might make you do?
Good point, I say, moving to sit up. I reach out and hook a finger through the belt loop of his jeans, then tug him toward me. He stumbles and falls forward, knocking me back a bit before he blocks his fall with a hand on the mattress.
Well, hello,
he says, then kisses me.
I swear I didn't orchestrate that.
I laugh, and am about to steal a kiss of my own, when I notice that the girl at the counter is staring at us. It's possible she's simply amused or annoyed by the customers who are playing on the furniture, but I don't think so. I stand up abruptly, pushing past Damien. Let's go, I say, my cheeks burning. This bed isn't nearly as cool as our old one anyway. The clerk says nothing as we're leaving, and I think I must have been imagining things. I'm proved wrong 15 minutes later when we exit the next store. We'd been shopping in ignorant bliss, looking at decorative candles and pretty vases made of ornamental glass. But the moment we step out onto the sidewalk, we're accosted by cameras and microphones and a screaming mass of reporters that I can only assume must have popped up en masse out of the sewers. Damien is already holding my hand. Now he squeezes tighter, and I squeeze back, letting the pressure of his hand around mine focus me.
Nikki, is it true that you were fired from Innovative for violating a morals clause?
The tennis center dedication begins in 4 hours, Mr. Stark. Can you elaborate on your previous statement regarding Merle Richter?
Damien, have you been informed about the content of Mr. Schmidt's affidavit? Is it true that he was paid to keep quiet?
I don't know who Mr. Schmidt is, but I make it a point not to glance at Damien. There's no way that I'm letting these bastards catch my ignorance on film. What are you going to do with your $1 million, Nikki? I almost answer that one. Surely, if I explain that the money is going to fund a business, they'll find me less interesting. A thin-lipped reporter in a neatly pressed suit steps forward and shoves a microphone in my face.
Can you comment on the rumors that you've slept with men in the past for money? Is Mr. Stark your most lucrative client?
The words strike me like a blow, and I stumble backward, suddenly nauseous. Worse, I'm caught off guard, and my facade has dropped. Tomorrow, all the tabloids will have a shot of my horrified expression. And I know damn well that the captions will suggest that I'm horrified that my secret has been revealed, not that the story is bullshit. I don't even realize that Damien has released my hand until I hear the sharp crack of his fist intersecting with the reporter's jaw.
Damien, no!
He turns to me, and I see the fire in his eyes. And I know that right then, his violent, fiery temper is 100% aimed at vindicating me. No, I repeat, grabbing his hand before he can take another swing. Do you want to get arrested? They'll take you away from me, and even if it's only a few hours until you post bail, I'll be alone until you get out. That calms him somewhat, and he takes my hand and yanks me back into the store. He has his phone out, and I hear him telling Edward to bring the limo around. The sales girl had been watching through the window, and now she turns to Damien.
Mister? Tell him there's an alley in the back.
She nods toward the throng still gathered in front of the store.
Unless you want to go through those creeps again.
Damien looks at her, and the slow smile erases the last remains of his fury. I want to give the girl a hug. Damien keeps his arm around me for the ride back to the apartment, but he says nothing until we are back in the penthouse. His eyes go quickly to where the mirror once hung. He does not have live-in help, but the crew from the office also cleans the apartment,
and they'd swooped in quickly and removed all the glass. Even the drywall is now repaired. There is no evidence of Damien's fury left, and yet he and I both know it is there.
I should have smashed his face in, Damien says.
No, you shouldn't have, I say. I draw a breath because I have been thinking about this. Besides, in a way, he's right. Damien's sharp glance almost halts my words, but I press on. That million wasn't just a modeling fee, and we both know it. He opens his mouth, then shuts it again, and rubs his temples.
I've done this to you.
The words are soft and filled with pain.
I swore that I would never hurt you, that I would be the one you could hold tight to. And yet I'm the one who has done this to you.
No. My tone is harsh, vehement. You've never done anything to hurt me. Ever. And I took the money because I wanted it. And I took your deal because I wanted you. To be honest, I add with a wry grin, I would have said yes for a lot less money.
Really?
He lifts a brow.
Now I really do feel like a fool. Come here.
He adds, then kisses me. My words, however, have not soothed him enough. I can feel the tension coming off him, like a spring wound too tight. When he looks at me, his face has the dark intensity of a hunter, and I feel as vulnerable as his prey.
Come on, he says. You know what I want, and what we both need.
I follow him to the bedroom, wanting nothing more than to forget the outside world once again. And when I see what he has in mind, I know that in a few minutes, I'll be thinking of nothing but Damien. He has pulled out his box of toys and is dangling the metal handcuffs from his index finger.
It occurs to me that this is the most surefire way to keep you in my apartment and in my bed while I'm in London.
You wouldn't dare, I say, and scoot to the other side of the bed.
Wouldn't I?
He leaps onto the bed, then rolls to the side, cutting me off as I try to break for the door. I squeal as he pulls me down on top of him, then very quickly fastens one cuff to my wrist, and then that cuff to the eye bolt. Don't you even think about it, I laugh, even though I know he's joking. Or at least, I'm pretty sure he's joking.
No?
He asks, as he starts to push my skirt up my body.
You don't want to stay like this, in my bed? Constantly ready to be fucked by me?
Now that you put it that way, I say, and then close my eyes with pleasure as he starts to kiss his way up my thigh. It is sweet torment, because Damien knows exactly how to drive me crazy. His breath teasing my sex, his lips making me wild. I struggle under his ministrations. As with each touch, he finds some new sensation, some new way to make me writhe and beg. Even the way his finger strokes my ankle, and his tongue licks the back of my knee, sends ribbons of pleasure curling through me. I twist and turn on the sheets, but the cold metal that surrounds my wrist prevents me from escaping the sensual onslaught that is coming so near to driving me out of my mind. The cuff digs into my skin, and with each turn, with each motion, I tug hard at it. I want the pain. I want the pressure. I want a bruise to rise there. And not because I want to escape the horror of this afternoon. That, in fact, is the least of it. No, I want it because it represents now. This moment, with Damien's mouth on my naked body, with his fingers exploring every inch of me, finding all sorts of erogenous zones and erotic secrets. I want the bruise because it is a physical reminder
of how Damien makes me feel. A bruise will be proof when he is in London that I was in his bed, and a reminder that he will come back to me. And so I struggle against my bonds, not because I want to get free, not even because I want the pain. I want what it represents, that I am Damien's, bound to him, marked by him, claimed by him. And right now, that is all I want to be. Chapter 21. It's the middle of summer, but with Damien gone, this might as well be a cold, wet Saturday in December. I know that he will be back Sunday afternoon, and that the trip is a quick one, but on my end, it doesn't feel quick at all. I am restless and lonely. Damien texted me when he landed. He'd asked how I was, and I'd smiled and gently rubbed the bruise that now rings my wrist like a bracelet. "Thinking about you," I'd said. "Missing you." All true, but what I didn't tell him was that I was bored out of my mind. Knowing Damien, he'd hire Cirque du Soleil to come into the living room and entertain me. Jamie texted me cyber hugs in response to my SOS, but she is roller skating in Venice with rain. I hope she manages to fall on her ass less than I did. I consider calling Lisa, but I don't know her well enough yet, and I think we should start with a simple coffee before I hit her up to provide me with entertainment on a lonely Saturday evening. I'm left with either work or photography, and since my camera is still at the Malibu house, I decide to go with work. Now is as good a time as any to finish the coding on my two smartphone apps that are almost ready to market. That, of course, means a quick trip to my condo. Since I have no car at Damien's apartment, that's not as easy as it sounds. The phone in the kitchen acts as both a regular phone and an intercom to Damien's office. I've seen him use it a dozen times, and I press the button to operate the speaker. "Hello?" I say tentatively.
"Yes, Ms. Fairchild. Can I help you?"
I grin. This really is pretty cool.
Yeah. Is this Ms. Peters?"
I ask, scraping my memory for the name of Stark's weekend assistant.
"How kind of you to remember."
"It is.
What can I do for you?"
"I don't have a car, and I need to go pick up something at home. Could you arrange a taxi, or..."
"I'll have Edward bring the limo around. If you take the elevator to parking level C, he'll meet you right there."
"Oh, okay, thanks." I end the call and shimmy happily in the kitchen. Yes, there are definitely perks to having money. As Ms. Peters had predicted, Edward is waiting for me.
"Thanks so much," I say.
"Not at all, Ms. Fairchild. Where are we going?"
"My condo," I say. "I just need to run in and pick up something, and I really wish you'd call me Nikki."
"Right away, Ms. Fairchild,"
he says, but he grins as he says it. I slide into the limo and curl up in the corner, thinking about that first night I met Damien. Or re-met him, I suppose, since our first encounter 6 years ago doesn't really count. I close my eyes and remember the way Damien whispered to me. How turned on I'd been by the words he'd spoken into the phone, and how shocked I'd been by what I'd so willingly done in the back of a limo. By the time we reach the condo, I've played back that entire evening in my mind, and I'm very much missing Damien.
"Will you be long?"
"Not too long. I need to download a couple of things onto my laptop, but that's all. Are you listening to a book?"
"Decided to try a classic," he says. "The Count of Monte Cristo." "Not bad so far. Not bad at all."
I smile at his assessment of one of my favorite books, then hurry up the stairs. I can hear the loud bangs coming from our neighbor Douglas's apartment, and I wince. I know it's not Jamie in there burning up the sheets with him, but I still scowl at his door. Inside,
I toss my purse on the bed that still looms in the living room, head for the two stairs that lead up to the bedroom, then scream as the door to the bathroom jerks open on my right. Ollie! Jesus Christ! I shout. You almost gave me a heart attack. What are you doing here? He looks like hell. His eyes are bloodshot, his skin splotchy, and his hair hangs limp around his face. I take a step toward him. Are you okay? A horrible thought occurs to me. Oh, shit, I say. You and Jamie didn't... I mean, she's out with Rain right now. The idea that he and Jamie had been doing the nasty only hours before she went out on a date with her new boyfriend bothers me almost as much as the idea of Ollie cheating on his fiancé. Actually, the whole thing makes me ill, and I'm not thrilled about finding Ollie in my apartment. I don't want to think about their drama. More than that, I'm still stinging from the fact that Ollie hasn't called since I saw him at the rooftop. Sure, he could be busy, but once the million-dollar painting news broke, surely he could have at least texted. Yet days have passed, and he hasn't said even one word to me about all the gossip that's been swirling around me like leaves in a windstorm. Or as Damien would say, like sharks smelling blood. I didn't do anything with Jamie, he says sullenly. Courtney and I had a fight. Oh, I'm sorry, I say, though I am not surprised. Yeah, me too, he sighs, then checks his watch. We're meeting for dinner. Patch things up, at least I hope so. So do I. I don't mention that I am dubious. Ollie doesn't have the best track record, and though he is my friend, at least I think he is still my friend, I can't help but think that Courtney deserves better. Ollie runs his fingers through his hair. Jamie let me crash here. I slept in your room. He shoots a questioning glance at the bed that fills the space between the dining table and the door. I say nothing, and after a moment, he shrugs and continues. I didn't figure you'd mind if I slept in your bed. I do mind, I say, the words snapping out before I think about it. I see the hurt on his face, but I don't care. I'm pissed, and it's all just spilling out of me. You just grab my bed like everything is like it always was? It's not. I've needed a friend, and you haven't even called. Maybe I didn't call because you didn't tell me about the painting, he says. $1 million. Is it true? It's true, I say. He shakes his head. Stark's bad news, Nikki. No, I say firmly. He's not. And did you ever think that that's exactly why I didn't say anything about the painting to you? Why the hell are you so fucking obstinate? Are you afraid to learn the truth about him? Or are you afraid I'll learn the truth about what you do with him? He's spewing words at me, clearly as pissed off as I am. Then, without warning, he grabs my arm and tugs it toward him. He jabs a finger hard on the bruise around my wrist. I jerk my arm back, blushing, and undoubtedly erasing any possible question in Ollie's mind as to the cause of those marks. You're being an idiot, he says. He reaches out and tugs a lock of my hair, then looks pointedly toward my thighs. How long will it be before Stark does something else that makes you take a knife to yourself? I don't even realize I've moved until I feel the sting of my palm intersecting his cheek. Get the hell out of my house, I say. He stands perfectly still, his mouth hanging open, his breath coming hard. Oh, shit, he whispers. Oh, shit. Nikki, I'm sorry. No, you're not, I snap. You'd be thrilled if Damien and I broke up. I don't know why you dislike him so much. And I don't know why you're so blind. I'm not, I say. I see him perfectly clearly. You see what he wants you to see. But you forget where I work.
You forget that my boss is his attorney. There is shit raining down on Stark, Ollie says. And I don't want to see you get hurt, he sighs. I warned you, didn't I? You're in the spotlight now, and that's not where you want to be. It's not where you should be. My blood feels as though it's moving too fast through my body, and I feel a little sick to my stomach. Just go.
Fine, whatever. I'll get my stuff and get out of here.
He returns to my room, then emerges with his briefcase. He marches for the door, then stops.
No, you know what? I get that things are bad between us now, and I'm sorry. But I can't just let this slide. Do you even know where he is now?
I cross my arms over my chest. In London.
Why?
Business.
Yeah?
He digs in his briefcase for his iPad, then pulls up a page from Hello.
Here,
he says, shoving the tablet at me. It's a picture of Damien with his arm around a woman. Her head is down. She's wearing sunglasses, and a hat shields most of her face. I don't know who she is, but I can guess. Apparently, Hello can't even do that, because the caption reads, "Did Damien ditch the delicious darling? Is it the end for Damien Stark and Texas beauty queen Nikki Fairchild? Our sources say Stark looked quite cozy with this unidentified woman as they strolled the Hampstead Heath earlier today. Stark arrived in London without the woman whose portrait he paid a cool $1 million for. Buyer's remorse, perhaps?" I hand the tablet back to him, feeling smug. She's a friend.
I thought he went on business.
He's not allowed to see a friend while he's doing business? There's a loud bang on the wall Jamie and I share with Douglas, followed by a very loud, very satisfied groan. Ollie and I meet each other's eyes, and as if on cue, we both laugh. For those few seconds, we are Ollie and Nikki again. But the seconds pass all too quickly.
I don't want to screw us up,
Ollie finally says. You already have, I say. All you can do now is try to fix it. For a moment, I think he's going to snap something back at me. Then he nods.
Yeah, I guess so.
He glances toward the door.
Should probably fix things with my fiancé first. That's all I do lately. Piss people off and then try to patch it up.
Ollie. Sadness envelops me as he leaves. I think about what Damien says, that Ollie is in love with me. But I don't think it's true. I think that he's grieving. Through our lives, I've always been the more damaged, and Ollie has been my rock. But I'm healing, and I have found a new rock in Damien, and I think Ollie wonders how our lives will fit together. It's not a question that I can answer for him. Not now. Not when he attacks Damien every time we come together. But I hope there is an answer, because I don't want to lose him. And I know that if I am forced to make a choice, I will go with my heart. I will go with Damien. I realize that Edward's probably halfway through the Count of Monte Cristo by now, and so I hurry to my bedroom and get my laptop and the files I need. I pause at the door, then return to my closet for my old Nikon, since the fabulous digital Leica Damien gave me is still in Malibu. And as much as I love the Leica, the Nikon was a gift from Ashley, and I refuse to give up using it entirely.
Back to the apartment?
Edward asks as he opens the limo door for me. I close my hand tight around the camera. Actually, I say, there's one more place I want to go.
How are you holding up, Texas?
Okay, I guess. We're on Evelyn's balcony, looking out over the beach. Blaine is out with friends, and Evelyn had been enthusiastic when I'd called from the limo to invite myself over. I've only been here once, the night that Damien and I met in Malibu,
but it feels like home. I attribute that more to the woman than the location. When I'm inside and away from it all, I do great. But when I see a paper or I'm accosted by a reporter, I feel like I'm going to crumble. Honestly, I don't know how celebrities do it.
They have the fame gene, she says. You don't.
There's no such thing as bad PR, I say dryly.
For some people, it's a truism. Have you watched reality television?
I have to laugh. I don't watch it regularly, but I've caught enough episodes with Jamie to understand what she's saying. Some people don't mind being the train wreck that other folks watch. Me, I mind.
Pretty soon you'll be last week's news. Until then, hold your head up and smile.
I flash a brilliant pageant smile. That's one thing I know how to do. In front of us, the sun is beginning its descent toward the horizon. I take out the Nikon and snap shot after shot, hoping that when the prints are developed, I'll have managed to capture even a fraction of that beauty.
You're going to show me the shots you took at the party, I hope,
Evelyn says.
The more snapshots there are of me, the better my odds of finding a picture that's actually flattering.
Do not even try fishing for compliments with me, I say laughing. You're gorgeous and amazing, and you know it.
It's true,
she says, then taps out a cigarette and lights it.
I just hope Blaine keeps remembering it.
I think you've got him hooked. Despite their age difference, they really do seem like the perfect couple. After the drama with Ollie, it's nice to know that some of my friends have relationships that are actually stable. I'd been spurred to come here after the bullshit with Ollie, but now that I'm here, I find I don't want to talk about it. Instead, I'm enjoying just hanging and chatting. We've already covered the scintillating topics of male models, Botox, and the current summer blockbusters. The conversation was so scattered, in fact, that I'd been surprised when she raised the specter of my personal tabloid hell.
Blaine's still mortified, of course, she adds. Thinks it's his fault.
That's ridiculous, I say. I'm the one who accepted money to pose nude, and then I consented to be tied up. If it's anyone's fault, it's mine.
We didn't have any idea how much Damien paid you, Evelyn said. But now that we do, I have to confess that I agree with Blaine. You sold yourself cheap.
I laugh, remembering that Sylvia said the same thing. At times like this, when I'm with friends and people who don't have shark's blood running through their veins, I feel almost proud of what I did. I negotiated a deal. I got my startup money. And what the hell is wrong with that?
Oh, hell, Texas.
I see it on your face.
Now I've gone and got you thinking about it. We can't have that. You want some wine?
Love some, I say. She disappears inside, then returns a moment later with a chilled bottle of Chardonnay and two glasses. She sits at the wrought iron table, then indicates the chair opposite with the tip of her cigarette.
So, tell me the rest of it, she demands.
The rest of it? The rest of what?
What's going on in your life, Texas? Fired twice. Excuse me, once was a layoff. Dating one heck of a fine catch, if I do say so myself. Your roommate's got a commercial in the works. Lot of life crammed into not very much time. You've certainly made quite the landing in our fair city.
Put that way, I have to agree. Despite the firings and the tabloid stuff that we're just going to ignore, things are great. I'm going to take some time to get a couple more apps on the market. She points at me.
An art app for Blaine. I haven't forgotten.
I grin, not sure if she means it or not. I'm ready when you are. But that's my short-term plan. Long-term is still in the development stages.
And Damien? You said he's in London? On business?
Yeah, but I think he took some time to visit a friend. Sophia. I guess she's in some sort of trouble.
That's too bad, Evelyn says. She props her hand on her fist and looks at me seriously. He say what kind of trouble?
No.
She says. What about Jamie? What's she up to?
I hesitate before answering, wondering about the shift in conversation. Does Evelyn know Sophia? Does she know what kind of trouble she's in? It's possible, I realize. Sophia is from his tennis past, and Evelyn was Damien's agent when he was a young sports icon, endorsing tennis shoes and God knows what else. I think about asking, but hold my tongue. Evelyn has become a solid friend, and I don't want to muddy the waters by using her as a conduit between me and Damien's past. Jamie's in heaven, I say, focusing on the original question. She's really hit it off with the guy she's doing this commercial with. Brian Rain. You know him?
I do, Evelyn says, and she doesn't sound pleased. I like your friend. Nice girl. A little green, but she'll get there. Brian Rain, though, that one's a climber. And I'm not sure your friend is tough enough to deal with the shit he'll eventually throw her way.
My heart is sinking. You're serious?
Afraid so. He won't be happy until he's banging the next big thing. And while he'd prefer a female, I think he'll fuck anything that moves if he thinks it'll ease his climb to the top. Male, female, or small farm animal.
She looks at me hard.
Your friend got the skin to make it when he ditches her?
I open my mouth to say that Jamie's as tough as they come, but I can't speak the words. They aren't true. She's got a tough veneer, but inside, she's soft and vulnerable. I hope you're wrong, I say.
So do I, Texas. So do I.
Chapter 22. The nice thing about limos is that they have a driver. I take full advantage of that knowledge, and I arrive back at Damien's apartment more than a little tipsy after downing half of Evelyn's very excellent bottle of Chardonnay. I am interested in nothing but sleep, and I make my way to the bed, hesitating only long enough to feel a pang of regret that I am in it alone. I've dropped my phone on the bedside table, and I reach for it, then tap out a text. In your bed. Drunk. Wish you were here. I have no idea what time it is in London, and I've had too much wine to bother with the math to figure it out. So I'm not sure if Damien is even awake. But only a few seconds pass before I get his response.
Wish I were too. At airport. Coming home to you. Tell me you're naked.
I smile and tap out a reply. Very. And wet. And wanting you. Hurry home. I have been Damienized, and I don't think I can last long without you. Parentheses, Damienized, verb, to be needful of Damien, especially in the sense of fucking and dirty talk. See, e.g., Nikki Fairchild. End of parentheses. His answer is almost immediate.
I like the new addition to your lexicon. And now I'll be hard for all of a long flight home. Plane boarding. See you soon. Until then. Imagine me touching you.
I don't know if he will get the text, but I send one final message. Yes, sir, I type. And then I hug my phone and drift off to sleep. When I wake, it's because my phone is buzzing against my cheek. I roll over, confused, and realize that it's already past noon and that I've missed a call. I quickly check to see if it's from Damien, but it's only a voicemail from Evelyn telling me I forgot my camera. I curse silently and open my email, planning to send her a quick note telling her I'll get it soon. That's when I see that there is an email from Damien waiting.
Nikki, on a quick layover in Amsterdam. Arriving LAX, 5 p.m. Do you mind if we go to a charity fashion show tonight? Starts at 9? Would much rather stay in with you, but Maynard's firm sponsoring. Swears press access limited. They'll get the boot if they even think about harassing you. Jamie invited, too. Let me know. Missing you. ...
I read the message twice, trying to decide why I'm smiling so broadly. It's only as I start the third read that I realize. He's asking me, not telling me. I take that knowledge and hold it close to my heart. Then I tap out my reply, though I know he won't get it until he lands. Of course, sir. But how you do tease, pretending to ask my consent when of course you know that I will do whatever you want, whenever and however. I hope you're spending your time in the plane thinking of interesting howevers. ... P.S. I have the perfect dress at home. Pick me up at the condo at 8? We'll check Jamie's social calendar. ... As it turns out, Rain has told Jamie that he's having a night out with the boys, so she's completely keen to be a third wheel with me and Damien. I'm not entirely sure what to expect from a fashion show hosted by a law firm, but it turns out that Bender Twain is just one of many sponsors for a function that is raising money for juvenile diabetes. The event is being held in a restaurant in Beverly Hills, but the place has been so transformed that it's hard to believe that it has ever been anything other than a fashion venue. A long runway bisects a giant room, and that is surrounded by chairs. The perimeter is lined with tables providing research, raffles, and gift bags. Jamie and I both snag a bag and are pleased to find them filled with cosmetics, hairbrushes, and even a darling tank top. "This is great," Jamie says to Damien. "Thanks for bringing me."
"Happy to have you along," he says.
His mood has been light since he's returned from London. "So the trip went well?" I ask once Jamie skips off to do the circuit.
"It did," he says.
"Sophia's okay?"
"She's settled," he says. "For her, that's about as good as it gets. And I heard from Charles. He's been working with my attorneys in Germany, and with any luck, that problem is going to go away as well."
"You mean they won't indict?"
He cocks his head to look at me. "That's my hope."
"That would be great," I say. And even though I don't have a clue about international business or what kind of regulations the Germans think you mucked up, you know you can talk to me about that kind of thing. I may not get it, but I promise I'll be supportive. The expression on his face is surprisingly guarded.
"Someday, when I'm ready, I will."
He pulls me in for a quick, chaste kiss.
"And yes, I believe that you would understand."
A smile flickers on my lips. I'm pleased, but I can't help but think that we're talking about entirely different things. I don't have the chance to ask, though, because the show is starting. We take our seats and watch the models parade down the runway in skimpy, sexy outfits, with Damien whispering his opinion as to exactly which outfits he wants to see me in. Reporters and photographers are at the base of the runway, and I realize that Charles has made good on his promise. The press is leaving me and Damien alone. Some weight inside me lifts a little, and I lean back in my chair and enjoy the freedom of knowing that, at least for a moment, I am not a bug under a microscope. When the show is over, the guests are encouraged to mingle and imbibe from one of the many cash bars while the crew sets up for the charity auction. I look around for Jamie, but she has already disappeared into the crowd, presumably to jump all over that imbibing thing. Instead, I see Ollie, and I suck in a tight breath. He is talking with a woman who looks somewhat familiar, but I can't place her. Damien hasn't seen him yet, but I know the exact moment when Ollie's glance finds us. I'm not sure why I'm surprised that he's here. After all, he works with Charles Maynard. The crowd shifts, and I see a pretty, dark-haired woman coming toward him with two drinks in her hands. Courtney. And then Ollie and Courtney and the other woman are all heading our way. I grab Damien's hand and smile my social Nikki smile. It is the first time I've felt the need to be so armed against Ollie, but I know that I need both the mask and Damien's strength, and that knowledge makes me sad.
Nikki, Damien, it's good to see you here. Ollie,
Damien says politely. He glances at the two women. Courtney, I say, it's so good to see you again. I give her a little hug, then formally introduce her to Damien.
Great to meet you, Courtney says, then turns her attention to me. I'm planning a destination wedding shower, but I haven't decided where yet.
She shifts toward Damien, including him as she speaks to me.
Tell me you two will come? And Jamie. And Rain, too.
Automatically, my eyes dart to Ollie's, but his expression is too guarded to read. I'm looking forward to hearing all the details, I say diplomatically. The truth is, I'm not sure there is going to be a wedding, much less a shower. Courtney, however, doesn't seem the least bit worried. The other woman with Ollie is introduced as Susan Morris. I keep my polite smile plastered on, but inside, I'm frowning, trying to figure out why her name is familiar. I'm about to ask when Ollie continues.
Susan is directing the fashion show.
I got my training in pageants, Susan says, although it wasn't formal training. More like an apprenticeship.
Susan Morris? I say, finally cluing in. Alicia Morris's mother? Susan Morris was almost as much of a stage mother as mine.
I was hoping you'd remember me, she says. Ollie said that Damien Stark was here with his girlfriend, and I just had to see you.
I'm so glad you did, Social Nikki says. The real me isn't at all interested in this relic from my past. I can tell that Damien sees the real Nikki, because he squeezes my hand in support.
Your mother and I have stayed close. In fact, since I moved to Park Cities, we lunch together at least once a week, she adds, referring to the affluent Dallas neighborhood where I grew up. I talked to her just this morning, as a matter of fact. Her voice is strangely tight, and I want nothing more than to get away from this woman who reminds me too much of my mother.
How nice, I say. I flash my wide pageant smile. I should really go check on my friend Jamie. It was lovely talking to you. She takes a step sideways and blocks my departure.
Your mother is so mortified she can't even hold her head up in public. And you haven't been any help. You haven't returned her calls or her emails. It's terribly ungrateful, Nicole.
Ungrateful? What the fuck? Damien steps closer to me.
I believe Nikki has already said that she needs to go check on her friend.
But Susan Morris is not taking the hint. She aims a finger at Damien.
And you! Elizabeth told me how you shipped her home just when Nicole needed her.
My mouth falls open. Needed her? Needed her? All I'd needed was for her to be gone.
And now you've dragged her into this degrading lifestyle.
Susan Morris is speaking machine gun fast, and with as much damage.
Posing nude, erotic art, and accepting money like a common whore. It's contemptible.
She literally spits the last word, and I see the tiny droplets of moisture fly from her mouth. I can only gape at her. My social Nikki facade having shattered under this unexpected onslaught. Damien is not so frozen. He takes a step forward, his expression like thunder. I think vaguely that he will hurt her, and then I should hold out a hand to stop him.
I don't. All I can think about is the nausea and tightness and clammy coldness that has settled over me.
Get the hell out of here,
Damien says, his hands pressed firmly against his sides.
I will not, she counters. You think you can buy anything? Even a girl like Nicole in your bed?
I know your type, Damien Stark. Do you?
He takes another step toward her, and she has the sense to look scared.
In that case, I think you would listen when I tell you to get out. And for the record, Nikki is a woman, not a girl. And the choice she made was her own.
Her mouth drops open, but she doesn't reply. Instead, she turns back to me.
Your mother expected better things from you.
I can do nothing but stand there. I'm frozen, my body chilled to the bone. And goddammit, I'm starting to shake. Deep, trembling shudders that I cannot control, and that I do not want Susan Morris to see. Throughout all of this, Ollie has stood stock still, Courtney's hand tight on his arm. But now he, too, takes a step forward.
Do what Mr. Stark says and get the hell out of here, or I will have you fired from this pageant right here, right now.
She shuts her mouth, gives each of us a hard look, then leaves. I do not remember sliding into Damien's embrace, but that is where I am, and it feels warm and safe, and my trembling starts to subside. I don't want him to open his arms, because I don't want to face the world. I want to be home with him. Back in the penthouse where ghosts from my past don't pop up. Where I'm not accused of being a whore. Where my personal life isn't gossiped about by people who don't know me and know even less about the choices I've made.
Are you okay?
Courtney asks. No, I say. I'm not. I see Ollie shoot Damien a vitriol-filled look. He may have sided with me against Susan Morris, but it's clear that he's still not on Team Damien.
I'll take you home,
Damien says. I nod, then hesitate, then shake my head. No, I want to stay.
You're sure?
I hesitate only a moment, then nod. I just need to go to the bathroom. Then I want to find Jamie. We haven't looked at all the booths yet. I am proud of myself. I sound so steady, even though I'm anything but. Damien's phone buzzes, and he glances at the screen, then types out a quick response before sliding it back in his pocket. Not important?
Charles, he says. He's at one of the cash bars and wants to have a quick talk. I told him I was with you. And business could wait until morning.
Can it? He looks right into my eyes.
Right now, the only thing I care about is you.
He takes my arm.
It looks like the ladies' room is over there.
While Damien waits, I go in, then immediately clutch the counter. I've been working so hard not to let Damien see my cracks. Susan Morris, my mother. The rumors of sex for money, of being a whore. It's all tied up in my head like so much noise, and I want to sort it out. I want Damien. But I know he blames himself, and if I can just gather myself a little, if I can just make one tiny inroad on keeping myself collected. I look around for something sharp, but there is nothing. Only the granite counter, the mirror, and the ceramic soap dispenser. I remember the apartment and the glass vase that Damien shattered. I close my eyes, feeling the imaginary shard in my hand. Glass cuts on all sides. It's perfect. It's like a tiny miracle biting into the palm of your hand. Wildly, I open my eyes and look around for something with which to break the glass. I snatch the soap dispenser, stand back, and start to hurl it. That is when I see my reflection. Oh God, what am I doing? My fingers go slack, and the dispenser crashes to the ground. And in the back of the room, from behind a closed stall door, I hear someone yelp. I jump. I hadn't realized anyone was in there. Then immediately relax when I see it as Jamie. Her face is splotchy, and her makeup is smeared. But I must look worse, because she takes one glance at me, looks down at the ceramic shards on the floor, and says, "I'm finding Damien." "Jamie," I call, trying to get her back, but it's too late. She's out the door, and only moments later, Damien is in the ladies' room. "I didn't," I say immediately. "I just dropped a soap dish, that's all." Jamie overreacted. He is looking at me with such intensity that I am certain he can see the lie inside my head.
"All right," he says slowly. "Now, tell me the rest of it."
I sigh, then drop my gaze. I count to 5, and then look back up to him, my composure restored. "I was going to," I say. "But I talked myself out of it. And then, really, I dropped the dispenser. It's slippery."
"You talked yourself out of it."
"It's a statement, not a question." "I saw my reflection in the mirror. I was going to break it with that," I say, nodding toward the gooey mess on the floor.
"You were going to break a mirror in a public restaurant instead of talking with me?"
I graze my teeth over my lower lip. I don't answer.
"I see."
"I didn't want to make it worse for you, but I guess I did that anyway."
"But you're okay now?"
He is speaking very carefully. "Yes, just a momentary glitch. System completely reset now. It was just that woman. That horrible woman."
"All right," he finally says.
He takes my hand. His is warm and reassuring.
"Let's go. We'll let the janitors worry about the mess."
I nod and follow him. Already I feel better, just knowing that Damien is at my side. In the restaurant, I search for Jamie, but I don't find her anywhere. "I'm worried about Jamie," I tell him. "She was a mess."
"Do you know why?"
"No, she was just... Oh, shit. Is that who I think it is?" I point into the crowd, and Damien's low whisper of,
"Well, hell,"
tells me I'm right. Brian Rain is at the event, too, and he's arm in arm, lips to lips, with a svelte, sexy blonde.
"That's Madeline Ames,"
Damien says. I remember Evelyn's words. A movie star? On her way up? He gives me a quizzical look.
"When did you start paying attention to Hollywood?"
I don't. Lucky guess. I look around the room again, suddenly worried. Now I really want to find Jamie. I find Ollie, but he hasn't seen Jamie either. Whatever detente we'd reached earlier when Susan Morris attacked me seems to have shattered, because he is quiet and distant and keeps shooting Damien angry glances. I, however, am too worried about Jamie to call him on it. It takes another 20 minutes before we learn that Edward took Jamie home.